alcoholic.
Hi, Christina.
Everybody can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have tons of experience speaking in microphones. No, I don't. So I would like to thank Duncan for this wonderful, nerve-wracking, frightening privilege of sharing my experience, strength, and hope here tonight. I got sober on January 7th, 2007. So I just celebrated 8 years of sobriety. And for those of you who are wondering, I don't just look really good for my age. I got sober when I was 16.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thank God every day for allowing me to reach a quick bottom and for bringing me to this wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a really nice childhood. My parents were loving. They raised me in the same household for the most part. I have a couple of siblings, and everything was great, except there was this hole inside of me. Way before I ever started drinking, I always felt like there was something wrong with me. I wasn't okay. I didn't know what it was. So my very first drink, real drink, not just sipping off of my parents' champagne or sneaking beers out of the fridge, my first real beer, let's get drunk, let's see what this does. It wasn't, I hear people say it was this like huge aha moment, like it was this enormous thing that they'll never forget. And, I will never forget my first drink. But it wasn't this huge, like, earth-shattering, groundbreaking experience for me. What it was is it was comfortable. It felt good. It made me feel like I belonged. And alcohol was very sneaky for me because I felt like it was safe. I didn't have a terrible experience where I immediately blacked out and threw up everywhere or... I felt like it was safe. Like I could drink. It was okay. Now the safety ended pretty quickly. By that time, alcohol really had a hold on me. I loved the way it made me feel. I was a minor, so I had to get kind of creative to get alcohol. A lot of theft. A lot of finding buyers, walking around town in the middle of the night looking for somebody who looked kind of sleazy enough to buy a minor alcohol, because I was, like 12, 13 years old, and it could be kind of hard to find those kind of people, but you go out at the right time of night, I'm telling you, they're there. So, I also wanted to make the point that I had some really great advice in how to prepare for a speaker meeting, because I've been able to add this to my fears list now, public speaking. And I had some really good advice, but I'm not using a pre-recorded speaker tape. I'm lip syncing. Just wanted you to know that this is live, this is real. I really gave that one a lot of consideration. And then there was the old, imagine everybody in their underwear. It'll be less frightening, less intimidating. But I think there's a few people where it might be more frightening. And my favorite one is if I get stuck, just yell, "Go Hawks!" So I might use that a couple times. So had to get creative to find ways to get alcohol. I did some of the worst things that I did before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was sober. It was desperation to get drunk. And what would I do to get drunk? And I did a lot of really terrible things. And, I carried that just perpetuated the reasons to drink for me. All the guilt, shame, remorse. So as if I didn't need a reason to drink already, I sure enough found more. So for me, alcohol, what I've always wanted my entire life. I didn't even know that I wanted it. I wanted to feel whole. I wanted to feel like that hole inside of me had been filled. I wanted to feel a part of. I wanted to feel connected to people. I wanted to be okay in my own skin. And alcohol absolutely provided that for me.
Christine.
Is there something?
No, it was just fine.
Oh, it was
keep going.
Okay.
Yeah,
go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
So I drank a lot, and I would, I never had like one group of friends, and really I never had a group of friends that drank enough for me. So I became kind of this chameleon. I would, just in order to kind of keep the party going, keep the alcohol flowing. So one night I would go out and drink with the Hicks up in the woods. The next night I'd be drinking down on the res with the natives. You know, I did a lot of, blending and trying to fit in just to protect my drinking, just to keep the drink, the alcohol available. Never fit in with any of them. Never felt like I fit in with any group of people. For a little bit while I was drunk, I was able to feel that way. But I also learned how to black out really quickly. For me, blackout, you know, came pretty quick. And I loved it, you know. I could get that, you know, first 15, 20 minutes of ease and comfort. And then before I had a chance to do all the stupid things where I would remember them, I was able to black out and do all the stupid things and just hear about them the next day. Go Hawks! See how many more times I can do that before you guys stop laughing. So I'd go to these parties and I'd hoard all the alcohol. And I wore out my welcome really quick because I'm an idiot when I'm drunk. Idiot. Never been like the functioning alcoholic or like the just gonna have a couple drinks to relax. I get smashed and I do really stupid, really annoying things. So I wasn't welcome a lot of the times. I had a lot of people who started to just, hey, can Christina come? Nope, no she cannot. Do you remember what she did last weekend? Yeah, hell no. So also I'm really glad, I love children, I have children, and I'm glad that there's none here tonight because I can't guarantee that like a couple F words might not slip. I'll do my best, but I'm gonna assume that everybody here has probably heard it before and won't be too offended. Maybe that's not a safe assumption. The thing for me, and my language has cleaned up a lot the longer I'm sober, but I get very passionate and really excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't always control what comes out of my mouth. Ready?
Go
ready?
Hawks.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
So, a lot of people didn't want me around after a while, pretty quickly, really. So when I went to these parties, I'd hoard the alcohol. I got into quite a few fights because I don't like to share. This is my fifth. Go find your own. Not everybody was into that, especially when they bought it. So, and I always made sure... Somehow in my drunken stupor, I always made sure that I had some for the next morning because I know that when I wake up, that flood of guilt, shame, and remorse hits me, you know, and I can't stand that, cannot stand that. So perfect fix is to get drunk first thing in the morning. Now, and my drinking was really a full-time job for me. I stopped going to school. I think I made it to a few classes in my first 2 weeks of high school, and I took water bottles full of vodka with me. Made math more exciting. So by the time I was 14 years old, I'm drinking alone. I'm hoarding alcohol, drinking in the morning, drinking daily. But there's nothing wrong with my drinking. You know, this is what normal kids do. And the legal system didn't see it that way. So I have multiple MIPs. I mean, I have a lot of MIPs, which is minor in possession. Because as fast as I thought I was, I only outran the cops maybe half the time that I got caught. So apparently not as fast as I think I am, especially not drunk. Because like I said, I'd get into fights. A lot of my fights were with sidewalks. Also not very coordinated when drunk, but I'm the only one. No. So I'm drinking a lot, and I'm drinking to cover up feelings of inadequacy, all these reasons. And so I get a few MIPs. I do a juvenile diversion program. I do probation a couple of times. And finally, I also do a lot of drugs. I know that's an outside issue, but it's part of my story. I did a lot of drugs, and I didn't get busted for DERI UA for alcohol. I knew how to get that out of my system pretty quick when I'm trying to pass UAs. I got busted for drugs. I got sent to inpatient treatment. So, cool, inpatient treatment, I'll do it. It's better than sitting in the juvenile detention, which I don't have any experience sitting in jail, but I'm pretty sure detention is worse. yeah, there's no TV, there's no cellmates, there's, which the cellmate thing could be a good thing that there's not any cellmates, but it's locked in a cell for 23 hours a day. And I read a lot. Sometimes I start quoting literature. And people are like, where did you read that? How do you know? Like, how did you read so much? You're only 24. Well, there's a lot of time sitting in a cell by yourself. So I read a lot. And so inpatient treatment is better than sitting in detention. So I go to inpatient, and my drinking had really negatively affected my family. I don't know how many times my mother has answered the door at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning after not having seen me for weeks, because I'd also take off for weeks on end and get really loaded and really drunk and just do that, you know, for weeks on end. So when she would see me after a few weeks, it was usually answering the door at 3 or 4 in the morning. I'd be half naked. I would have some strange guy not taking me to the door to drop me off, but peeling out of the driveway and covered in puke, you know. That's what every mother wants to see, right? So I know that my family was really affected because they love me, you know. And I used to think, you know, my family hates me. She'd call the cops every time I showed up like that. So, of course, my mom hates me. She just wants me out of the house. She wants me gone. What she wanted is she wanted me safe. Because what I was doing was not safe at all. I was in a lot of really bad situations. And I know that she was worried about me. So I'm in treatment. I was in treatment in March, and my sister's birthday is in March, so she spent her 13th birthday visiting me in a treatment center. You know, there's worse places to be, obviously. My little sister is, you know, she's my kid sister. I would do anything to protect her. I would do anything. So knowing that she'd given up her birthday, which when you're 13, birthdays are a pretty huge deal for most kids. She'd given up her birthday to come see me in a treatment center because I'm a piece of crap alcoholic drug addict. I had a lot of guilt. I felt really terrible. It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to keep me from drinking. Knowing that I caused all this pain and chaos in my family was not enough. I didn't care. And it's not that I didn't care. My actions showed that I didn't care, though. So I get out of treatment, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to try this. Like, I'm going to go to AA. I'm going to really try to stay sober. I'm going to try and be a good person. She said that I was a terrible person. And I was out of treatment for a couple of weeks and thought, okay, this is what I'm going to try. Now, I changed my plan. I'm not going to try to go to AA. I'm not going to try and stay sober. I'm going to try some controlled drinking because I hadn't really tried that yet. I was, you know, if I started to drink, it's because I wanted to get smashed. I wanted to get effed up. So I'm going to try some controlled social drinking. I'm going to go camping with some friends and just drink, not get drunk. The intention was not to get drunk. And I can't do it. And I'm guessing that for the alcoholics in this room, you can't do it either. That's why we're here. I, you know, got plastered that night, blacked out. Woke up the next morning to some guy I didn't know. Wasn't at the campground anymore. That's pretty typical of my drinking. That's what happened most nights that I was drinking. And I'd heard enough in AA and enough in treatment to know, you know, the big book. I love the big book because it lays the diagnosis of an alcoholic out, and it lets me decide if I'm alcoholic or not. I don't have a treatment center telling me, okay, you're da-da-da-da-da alcoholic, or you're da-da-da-da-da drug addict. I get to decide that for myself when I work the steps. So I'd heard enough in here to know what some of the characteristics of an alcoholic was. And there's the test. We call it, you know, my sponsorship calls it the test. Go out and try some controlled drinking. Try it again. Well, I failed that test. Or I passed it because I ended up here, which has been the greatest gift of my life. And so some of these signs were starting to make sense to me. Some of these characteristics and traits were kind of clicking for me. But I didn't stop drinking. I drank for another year and a half after that. And it only got worse. I thought that I had gone to treatment and I was going to be able to learn how to drink better. And they don't tell you that in treatment, you know, but that was what I had in my head. I was going to be able to learn how to be a good alcoholic. And, you know, I thought I could, like, learn my alcoholism away. And so I keep drinking and, you know, whatever, all this stuff happens. And like I said, sleazy people. The kind of person that buys a kid alcohol and gets them drunk, they're not upstanding citizens of society. And neither was I. I don't regret this, but I really don't like this part of my story. Is I used to babysit for a couple, a married couple, and they would pay me in alcohol, and I would babysit these four kids, one of them who was like 9 months old, while I was drunk. And I have kids today. You come around my kids drunk? Not okay. And I'm certainly not leaving you alone with them. So, the kind of person who furnishes alcohol to a kid and then lets them watch your kids while drunk, not a good person. Not a good person, but a very troubled person. And that led to some really terrible situations. And it wasn't just alcohol. It was taking me to the meth dealer's house at 3 a.m. And, vacant buildings and all sorts of really lovely places. So this stuff's all happening. I mean, this kind of stuff's just happening to me all the time. And I still don't see a problem with my drinking. You know, maybe it's the people I'm around. Maybe it's the things I'm doing. But it's certainly not my drinking. I will do anything to protect my drinking. My head will always find a reason why it's okay for me to drink. Cunning, baffling, powerful. It certainly is. So my very last drunk was New Year's Day of 2007. Well, not very last drunk. My last major blow up drunk was January 1st, 2007, and that night I received multiple legal charges, including assault on an officer. That next morning, I woke up in a padded cell, no clothes, no blankets, vomit all over, my head next to this round hole in the floor, which is a toilet. Pretty humiliating, you know? What I had done to get there was I was at a party, and I used to drag my little sister along to these parties with me. I got her drunk for her first time. I got her stoned for her first time. You know, I was really, I was not a good big sister. I thought that I was. Sometimes, you know, I thought that getting her drunk and getting her stoned, I thought that those were, you know, kind of like rites of passage or whatever it is, and bonding, really unhealthy bonding. And I would drag her around to these parties with me, and we were at a party, and we're outside in the alley drinking. We're getting really loud. The cops show up, and the first thing I do is I step in, and I'm going to talk to these cops, and I'm going to fucking take care of this. Just you stand there, don't say anything, I got this. And I'm hammered. And I always think that when I'm drunk that I can act sober. And I don't think that's ever worked, ever. So I'm going to handle this situation and try telling them, oh yeah, everything's fine. We're just, you know, having a little disagreement or something. Because we'd been fighting. There were other girls in the alley and we'd been fighting. They were probably trying to take my vodka again. So she's standing there and they're talking to me, and they handcuff me and put me in the cop car, and I see them go and try and talk to my sister. And I'm protective big sister, and so I start screaming and kicking and spitting and swearing and leave my sister alone, you know? I think I'm protecting her. And especially at the time, I thought she was really drunk. Turns out she tells me today that she hadn't had a drop to drink that night. But I was, you know, I wanted to protect her drinking too. Because drinking is so important that I'll not only protect mine, but I'll protect yours too. So I'm acting insane, just thrashing around in this cop car. And so they pull me out, they try to talk to me. I start kicking them, I start spitting on them. They hog tie me, throw me back into the cop car, and I'm continuing to thrash about the whole way to the hospital. I get to the hospital, they handcuff me to the hospital bed, and I'm, you know, pulling on the handcuffs, spitting, kicking, screaming at the nurses. My dad shows up, and you know, and this is kind of, I think about this sometimes, because I was a blackout drinker. But I remember this night, and I think that's kind of a miracle. So my dad shows up, and he's crying, and this is my dad. I don't think I've ever seen him cry, because here's this little girl, you know, a complete fucking disaster. I was a wreck. And that's how I, you know, that's how I've been living. And I don't think they realized, I don't think my parents realized that's how I was living, because I was just gone, you know. I would just leave for weeks and weeks on end. So he sees me in the hospital, and he's crying, I'm crying, you know. And, so, and then I come to in a padded cell. So they hold me for a couple days, I get out, and I drink some more. Because that's the solution. Alcohol is the answer. It was always my answer. So I have these new legal charges, and there's some pretty serious legal charges, like assault on an officer. They don't really take that one too lightly. And I, like I said, I'd done the juvenile diversion, I'd done probation for 3 years. So they proposed drug court. So I tried drug court, juvenile drug court. And I start going to daily meetings. I wasn't in school yet, so a lot of times I was going to 3 or 4 meetings a day. And eventually did get back enrolled in school. And let me tell you, one of my biggest fears getting sober, or initially getting sober, I really feared for my brain, because suddenly I'd always been pretty bright, I'd always been pretty smart, and I think it's funny because most alcoholics are, we're really smart people, and we use some of that genius to find more ways to protect our drinking. So suddenly I'm having a hard time remembering things. I don't know basic math. Reading comprehension is out the window. And that was something that I'd always kind of prided myself in, was that I was fairly smart. And I thought it was one of the things, because everything else was wrong with me. And even that was wrong with me, you know. But everything was wrong with me, so I thought that that was something that I could kind of hold on to. Well, at least I have my smarts, you know. Because I sure as heck, anyway. So I thought that I'd really done a lot of damage. And so getting back into school for me was really a big deal. And for the first, I'll tell you, for the first year that I was sober, that didn't go away. It slowly, slowly got better, thankfully. And here's the thing, is I know that it doesn't always get better. And so I know how lucky I am and how blessed I am. I remember hearing about wet brain when I was doing it. I heard about it in treatment, as a matter of fact. And I thought, heck yes. Like, that's what I wanted. Because at that point, I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live either. And so wet brain, or what is it, Korsakoff syndrome, really, really for me, I felt like it was the right fit. And so when I drank hard, and I drank a lot. And I always had that in mind. Like, I can do enough damage to not come back from this. And I'm really grateful. Incredibly, incredibly grateful that that didn't happen. And, you know, I've since found out that it just takes a lot to get to that point. So I'm in drug court. I'm going to meetings. Not working the steps, don't have a sponsor, don't have a home group. I'm going to a lot of meetings, and cool, that's a start. And I wasn't drinking either. That was the huge thing. I wasn't drinking, and I wasn't using drugs. So man, I'm a rock star. I got sobriety down. I know what this is about, and I can feel the power, you know? I can feel sobriety. Man, life is good. Now, when I'm alone, when I'm by myself, in my own head, life sucks. I hate myself. I've done so many terrible things. How could I be a worthy person? How could I be a good person? I'm a piece of crap. But I go to a meeting and, hey, I got 30 days sober. Doing great. Um, I was just full of it. I wanted this to look good. I wanted people to like me. I wanted to fit in. I really wanted to fit in. And you guys were sober. You guys were happy. So that's what I gotta be too, right? I missed the part where you guys had worked your steps. I missed the part where you had a sponsor in a home group and were doing service work. Saw you in meetings, and I was there too. I also didn't tell anybody, but every day I wanted to get drunk. Every day for a year. Every day. It was always there. It was always in my head that I knew how to feel better. I knew it. There was this other part of me, though, that I know I don't want that. I know I don't want all the... And what I really didn't want is I still wanted to get drunk, absolutely. And if I could get drunk today and not have any negative consequences, I might. I don't know. But here's the thing. Every time I get drunk, something bad happens. Or every time something bad happens, it's because I'm drunk. Or trying to get drunk. Because that's when the worst things happen. For me. So, 9 months sober. Hadn't done anything really to you know, I was going to a lot of meetings. But I wasn't really doing anything else. And I was showing up at drug court. I was also in treatment. I still hated myself. I wanted to drink. And I wasn't. I wasn't getting that sense of ease and comfort that we all know about. I wasn't getting that. I was crazy. I was a lunatic. Stone cold sober. And another part of my story is that I don't talk about this much because it doesn't, I don't know how much it really pertains to AA. I was a cutter too, because what I did was I would do it, and especially when I got sober, because I wasn't getting any relief from drugs or alcohol, but I knew that physical pain could relieve me from the emotional and mental anguish that was happening inside my head. So one night I decide, okay, I'm done with this. You know, AA works for you guys, but I have found a way to fuck it up because it wasn't working for me. And so I cut myself pretty good. Thankfully, this is one of these weird, like, God miracles, God timing. And now this was 7 years ago, where chemical dependency counselors had a little bit more freedom and to do, you know, go out in the community and do things. My drug counselor shows up at my house. She's never been to my house before. What the heck is this? This is weird. She was worried about me. She had a weird feeling. So she wanted to come check on me. And she told me that she didn't call the cops, but shortly after, the cops show up at my door, and back to the padded cell I go. So I wish I could say that I stopped going to my equivalent of jail at the time once I got sober, but that's not the case. I still spent a lot of time in there. Just because I stopped drinking didn't change my attitude and my behaviors. I continued the behaviors, and some of them got worse. Suddenly, guys were a lot more fun now I'm sober. I remember what they look like. And their distractions. Anything to distract me from what's going on inside my head. I couldn't stand being in there. So, I go to drug court that next Wednesday. They pull me out of, because they kept me in detention. I go up to drug court, and it's an open court. And they're hounding me about what's going on, and I just, you know, nothing, I'm fine. Okay, so why did you almost die? I screamed at them. I screamed. I said, what do you want me to say in front of all these people that I tried to fucking kill myself? And I said, yeah, like, they wanted some honesty from me. That's what everybody wanted. They wanted me to be able to say, hey, I'm not okay right now. But I couldn't do that. I'd never been able to do that until that point. Because I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm fine. Leave me alone. Get away from me. I'm fine. And I wasn't. So I look out in the audience, and there's like mothers there for their kids, and they're like bawling in the audience, and people are just like, oh, you poor thing. And I look around, and there's this woman that I'd seen at meetings. I'd talked to her at meetings. You know, I kind of had thought about maybe asking her to be my sponsor. If I were going to get a sponsor, I would have picked her. And she's there. You've never heard that line before, have you? She's there. And she came up to me after court was over, before they were hauling me back in. And she said, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And she'd heard from somebody that I was in there for a suicide attempt. And she cared. This was, you know, people have always cared about me. I can see that now. People have always cared about me. This was the first time that I could see it. That this woman, who barely knows me, took time out of her life to sit in stupid drug court for 3 hours just to make sure I was okay. What a beautiful person. So I get out, and she became my sponsor, and we start working the steps. And I love this woman. She's absolutely everything that I wanted to become. She was strong. She was married, but still independent. She had a life. She had friends. And the most important thing that I saw in her was she just had like this beaming confidence. She didn't care what other people thought of her, or if she did, she certainly did not let it affect what she was doing. She had a backbone. People didn't just walk all over her. She could say no. She could say no politely, and she could also say to F off. And people didn't seem to get too offended by it either. So that's what I really want right now. So wonderful woman. I worked my steps with her. You know, I was able to, like I said, go through the first 164 pages of the big book, and that's where the steps are contained. Step one, I was, you know, we go through Bill's story and more about alcoholism, and I was able, in the doctor's opinion, love that one, I was able to diagnose myself as an alcoholic. I was able to say, okay, I relate to this guy. I relate to all this other crap that they're saying about alcoholics. That's me. All right. Okay, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. So we continue working in the steps. We get to the fourth and fifth step, and that's where I'm going to guess a lot of people get hung up. It's not just me. Fourth and fifth step, pretty hard. I made it pretty hard. I already had a ton of guilt and self-loathing that I thought looking at all this stuff would just make it worse, and kind of it did. When I say kind of it did, in the sense that what I was told is the fourth step is done in the middle of a prayer, because we read a prayer out of the book at the third step, and then we read one again later on. I was in the middle of a prayer, this whole fourth and fifth step. And I was letting it sit with me. It took me a few weeks to do it. And so for those few weeks, I was a bigger piece of crap than ever. I really thought I was worthless. And then I get actually to the fifth step, where I get to tell her all this stuff. And wow, pretty freaking cool. She did not spit on me. She did not look at me and say, you're right, you are worthless. She didn't do that. She said, oh, honey, I've done worse. She goes, oh, is that all? It wasn't all, though. There was something that I had not put on that fourth step. Now, here's the really great thing is with God, my tolerance for pain becomes a lot lower. That was eating me up, that I knew something that I wasn't telling her. And I had lied to her. I said, yeah, that's everything. I'm totally honest. With thorough, fearless inventory. Except for this one thing. So, it really, it only took me a few hours. By that night, I was on the phone bawling with her. Oh my God, there's something else. And we worked through it. She held my hand and we walked through it together. That hole inside of me, what I was missing was a human connection with another human being that I could be honest with somebody and not have them look at me in disgust. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and God has filled that hole. I'm a whole person now. I'm not that scared, lonely, self-loathing little kid. I'm okay with who I am. I'm okay with what I've done. I still think about things that I've done and cringe. I won't tell you that I don't. Absolutely cringe. I hate what kind of example I was to my little sister. You know, she ended up with her own drug and alcohol issues. And I honestly can't help but feel like, well, look what her example was. I was a crazy, slutty little drunk running around downtown Port Angeles. Like it's downtown Seattle. Who knows, there might be sleazier people in Port Angeles. So, sometimes I think, you know, my story's not that exciting. I didn't, you know, break out in spots like Mexico, Florida, Brazil. I woke up at the bus stop. Drunk because I'd passed out there. My story is mine, you know, it's my experience. And your story is yours, and it's the most important one. I hear that at meetings and I love it. Nobody else's story really matters but yours. Do you think you're an alcoholic? Do you think you might have a problem with drinking? We have a solution. A beautiful, wonderful solution. Today, I absolutely have a quality of life better than I ever could have hoped for. We did this assignment, this silly little assignment. To me, it was silly. In treatment, in outpatient treatment. And it's like, where do you see yourself in 6 months? Where do you see yourself in a year, 5 years, 10 years? I sold myself short, big time. Big time. And whatever like tangible things are happening in my life, it's nothing compared to how I feel. I'm okay being me. I like who I am. There's definitely areas, room for progress, and I'm okay with that too. I don't think about drinking every day. And here's the coolest part for me about the drinking. I don't think about not drinking every day either, because that took a long time to go away too. I can't drink today. I can't drink today. Not going to drink today. Not going to drink today. Mantra inside my head. Today, drinking's out of the equation. Now I get to learn how to live life. Drinking's not the problem anymore. Living is. I'm so blessed and I'm so fortunate, and everybody here sitting in this room tonight is. You need to know that. You're fortunate to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous very deeply and very passionately. It didn't just save my life, it gave me one. I have, 5 years ago, about to the day, I was celebrating my third sobriety birthday, and I was at my home group birthday meeting, and my now husband proposed to me there. And the really, what I find funny about that is my initial thought was, that's an outside issue. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. Why would you do that? I take Alcoholics Anonymous very seriously. It was the thing that saved my life. We now have two beautiful children together. And I always thought, I knew that if I ever had kids, I was just gonna be a really crappy single mother. I never imagined that I would have two kids with the same person. That one's a real miracle for me. Because that's not the kind of person I was. Commitment, what's commitment? Faith, fidelity, what? No. I didn't understand even what those things were. Two beautiful kids. Every Wednesday, I get to take my daughter to ballet. These are the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to be present in my children's life. I get to watch them grow up. I get to be the good example that I wasn't for my sister. So I'm not the only one grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and what it's done for me. Someday my kids, if they ever find out my story, because I don't talk about this kind of stuff at home, they'll be grateful too. So life still have it. I still have problems in life today. You know, it's not perfect, and I wouldn't want it to be perfect either. I have this great job that I love, and you know, it's always really fun. We have a lot of fun at work, and we do something that I really believe in. And it's not just a job; it's a career. Never thought that I would be able to hold a job, let alone have something that I could call a career. I remember in detention one time, some counselors had come back to talk to me, and it was one of those few moments where I was transparent and honest. And I told them I was scared, because I couldn't stop drinking long enough to even go to school. So how was I gonna do anything with my life? I really thought, I knew that I was just going to live like that for the rest of my life. I drank with people like that. Never had an education, never had a steady job, just drunk all the time. And I thought it was going to be me. I knew it. And it could have been me. It still could if I don't keep coming here and doing this. So, great job. Also, great stresses. I can deal with it. I don't drink over it. I don't get angry about it. I don't take it out on people. Sometimes my husband, but mostly I try not to. No, really, I try not to. Because I can also recognize these things as they're happening today. Has anybody else ever been in a situation where you're really, really angry, you're saying really, really mean things, but in the back of your head, you got this voice that says, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. You can stop now. That was me all the time. I just didn't know how to shut up. I'm gaining that ability. I haven't perfected it or honed it, but I'm a heck of a lot better than I was 8 years ago. I'm a heck of a lot better than I was 5 years ago or 4 years ago. This just as my drinking got worse and worse and worse, my sobriety in my life is getting better and better and better. The disease is progressing. And for me, I'm either progressing backwards are progressing forwards. There's no, and I talk about this a lot, sometimes I wish there was just like a middle of the road, okay, let's stop now. Everything's good. Let's just have this next few weeks be really, really good and nothing else happen. Well, life keeps happening. Yeah, too bad. And I'm not opposed to outside help either. After I'd worked my steps, I'm like, okay, the first 164 has the answer to every single problem in my life. And maybe it does. I have found problems that I've been able to take to professionals and get their opinion and their input, and it's been beneficial. Because I'm grateful for that, too. I'm grateful for, because that takes a lot of humility for me to say, okay, I need help, and I haven't been able to fix it with the first 164 yet. That is incredibly humbling to me, because for 7 years, about 7 years, I was sober and I refused to acknowledge that there could be help outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there is, and it's okay to accept it. It is for me. Still have lots of problems in life, but drinking's not one. Not today. Hopefully not tomorrow. I can tell you that I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get drunk right after this meeting. Pretty sure. Well, there were a lot of meetings where I couldn't tell you that. I was pretty sure I was going to get drunk. I did get drunk after a lot of them. A lot of blessings in life. I've got great family. My little sister, the one that I beat myself up over for being such a crap sister, she's sober. Just back from inpatient treatment. Living in an Oxford house, going to meetings, has a sponsor, working her steps. And I had nothing to do with that. Because I tried dragging her to meetings with me, just like I drug her to parties. But for some reason, she was more willing to go to the parties with me than meetings. And she's a beautiful woman. I'm so grateful that God allowed that to happen. He saw that that was the right thing to do with her. She got to come to her own bottom, have her own experiences, and find her own path in recovery. I didn't have to, nobody could have. I couldn't force it on her. She had to find it herself. I'm so grateful that she did. I met my husband in Alcoholics Anonymous. I figured that was probably obvious because I don't think non-alcoholics would propose at a birthday meeting. They'd probably do something like take them to the beach and get down on their knee or something. Not my style. I've been able to watch his growth. I have found everything that I needed in Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober and to create this wonderful life. Even this outside help issue was suggested to me by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told me, lower your pride. I think, I talked way longer than I thought I would. Because I've never presented at a speaker meeting like this. Last night, last minute, of course, because how else would you do something? I kind of tried to prepare. And I tried to do a mock speech. It lasted for about 2.5 minutes because I could not stand the sound of my own voice echoing in my room. Having an audience is much nicer. So thank you very much for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And thank you for listening. I feel like everybody was really like paying attention, and I'm pretty impressed. Because sometimes I can talk for 5 minutes in a regular meeting, and people are like on their phone, and it doesn't happen often because I'm a pretty exciting person. And humble. Thank you, Sally, for pointing that out. I am very humble. I didn't even bring it up. Sally did.
Nice.
So I want to say happy birthday to all the people who celebrated annual birthdays. January is a great month to get sober. Go January! Almost as effective as Go Hawks. And really, congratulations to the people with 30, 90, 60 days. My first year, I never want to do it over again. And I'm not saying that the first year is bad for everybody or anybody. You're sober, you're here. These are amazing things. These are miracles. My first year, I never want to do over again. So sometimes I think that if for no other reason, I'm not going to get drunk just so I don't have to do the first year over. So thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, I wanted to give Christina her gift.
Thank you.
From Tech-In, which is also her home group.
Yes.
And help clean up. Now we can circle up and close with the serenity prayer.